The 100 pre-dark cars, and even more trucks of assorted sizes, filled the parking lot to overflowing, forming a maze of rotting tires and lopsided chassis and empty windshields. Under a sagging awning of dead fluorescent lights and bird nests, stands of fuel pumps fronted a squat white building whose dirt-smeared windows and dead neon offered cold beer and chili on sale, both reduced to dust long ago. As silent as the wind, she rode the huge bike through the labyrinth of wrecks, ever mindful of the sharp metal shards that reached out for unwary travelers like thirsty daggers. A single scratch from a rusty nail could kill these days. First every muscle went sore, then your mouth clamped shut, then came the tremors, the sweats, and death. She blocked the memory of that terrible day in the Citadel when the healer's axe fell upon her father, the ward himself. The chems did exist, white powders and tiny pills, but they were rare beyond words and fetched the owner's weight in bullets or a full season of food. Stopping the BMW motorcycle near the pumps, Amanda killed the 200cc engine. The vibration between her thighs ceasing was the only sign the motor had ceased to function. Unlike so many other motorcycles, the BMW wasn't driven by a sprocket and chain assembly, but possessed a multi-gear transmission like a car. It was as quiet as a whisper, perfect transport for a wreck. Kicking down the stand, Amanda stepped off and drew her Thompson machine gun from its cradle on the handlebars. The Tommy gun was heavy and long, but was chambered in .22 caliber rounds and carried 600 shots in a massive cheese wheel clip. As a spray and pray for enemies hidden in the bushes or for onrushing crowds of muties, it was an excellent weapon. For max penetration, Amanda carried a pristine blue steel Desert Eagle 50 caliber autoloader on her hip. Releasing the chin strap, Amanda removed her camo helmet and glanced carefully around, searching for any signs others might have been here recently. A cig butt on the ground, the faint smell of gasoline or Mary Jane in the air, fresh urine stains on the white walls. But the area seemed clear. Good. Not many travelers were aware that a supply of fuel remained in the deep underground tanks. However, the Sons of the Knife did know about it, and this was a major refueling spot for them. The bikers challenged Herville's right to loot the wheel, and they too were on her agenda today. Resting the helmet on the handlebars, Amanda set the alarm, palmed the key into a pocket, then got a siphon hose and a fuel can from her saddlebags. She had plenty, but wanted full tanks for the next leg of her journey. It was only 20 more miles to the wheel, and there she would try to deal with the driver of the huge tank that protected the ivy-coated city. The massive war machine was often seen traversing the streets of the wheel in perfect safety. But if anybody dared to enter the city limits, they were never heard from again. Clearly, the tank commander ruthlessly ruled the pre-dark ruins and had no intention of sharing the unimaginable wealth stored in its warehouses and skyscrapers. Her face burned with fury at the thought that her father's leg might have been saved if only her sec-men could have reached the medicines in the hospital downtown. With only whiskey mixed with Jolt to dull the pain, it was a miracle her father had survived. But that was why she was here. Where commoners failed, the barons had to succeed. She would cut a deal with the driver, marry him if necessary, or die trying to kill him. Whatever happened, the wheel would belong to Novaville, and then the whole mountain range. Unzipping her leather jacket a few inches to ease the stifling heat, Amanda walked slowly, listening to the world around her. In spite of her bravado at court, Amanda didn't want to be outside the Ville walls. However, while large groups were always attacked by the Knives, solos often snuck by without hindrance. Alone was her best bet for success. Stepping by the pumps, she moved to the white snack bar and found a couple of doors marked for both sexes. She eased open each with a Thompson and found only autumn leaves, yellow papers, and a newly dead squirrel, a prisoner of the inner swing door. Grabbing the rodent by its tail, she stuffed dinner into her pocket and continued with the inspection. Inside the building, tables had been piled into a makeshift barricade, bullet holes dotting the formica surfaces. But there was nobody behind the counter. However, off in the corner she found the remains of a campfire, Norm bones mixed with Mutey skulls in the cold ashes. The Muteys had to have chased some Norms to this place. The men had staged a last-ditch fight, and the Stickies got them anyway, afterward eating Norm and Mutey corpses alike. Amanda spat on the corpses. Norm fools. She was glad they were dead, and hoped it wasn't quick or painless. Giving Mutey's flame this close to the fuel dump? Were they insane? The kitchen and freezer were empty, as were the offices and video games room. The squat machines, painted with gay colors, had died. The microsecond electrical power was lost. Satisfied she was alone, the heiress to the Citadel went outside the snack bar and around back. Searching the ground, she found faint yellow lines and a blue striped area for some sort of wheeled transport, and beyond that, a couple of flat metal discs set into the concrete on the ground, the access lids for the underground storage tanks. Oddly, all three contained gasoline, and nobody had ever been able to satisfactorily explain why the station would have three different storage tanks for the exact same thing. Safety wasn't an issue, because if one tank detonated, surely the others would ignite also. Fuel was fuel. It didn't come in calibers the way bullets did. What worked in one engine worked in another. The pre-dark world was full of such inexplicable mysteries. Maybe that was why it fell. Simple foolishness. Kneeling on the asphalt, she tried to unscrew a lid, but was unable to make it budge, and the others proved equally resistant. Laying down her gun, she used both hands to strain against the accumulation of rust, almost busting a knuckle as the lid came free. Sucking on the minor wound, she slid the heavy steel disc aside. Inside the round depression was the main feeder pipe, two valves, a button that did nothing these days, and the vent hole. That was what she wanted. The hole had been plugged with a piece of cork long ago to prevent evaporation and save every drop of the juice. Wiggling out the cork, Amanda dropped in the hose until she heard a splash. Making sure the other end was in the canister before starting, she worked the hand pump in smooth strokes, nice and easy. In a few minutes, the container was full. She neatly returned everything to its original position, awkwardly jockeying the heavy metal lid back into place. Capping the canister, she reached for her weapon, and a blur struck the Thompson, sending it skittering into the weeds. Spitting a curse, she drew the eagle and fell backward against the snack bar. That had been an arrow. Controlling her breathing, she studied the weeds and wreckage. Nothing was in sight. A sound made her jump, and the woman raced for her bike. Damn her stupidity. Sticky she could handle by the dozen, and stingwings and grumblers were common problems. But an arrow meant people. Could be throwbacks, technophobes, rad worshippers, or worse, the sons of the knife. If that rabble got their filthy hands on a lady of the blood, daughter of the ward himself... As the blonde turned the corner, a black shape hit her in the face. Amanda had to have blacked out for a second, for she awoke lying on the ground, surrounded by them. She screamed, knowing full well that nobody could hear, and the pack was upon her, ripping and tearing like wild animals. Leviathan's 15 wheels hummed steadily as the vehicle rolled along the road. Once past the suburbs, Ryan found a highway in good shape. The concrete was relatively smooth, and there were few potholes. As was to be expected, the road had no signposts, so they could only guess it was the Route 65 on JB's map and hope for the best. Most of the day went by in unaccustomed quiet as the friends cleaned and reloaded their weapons, then consumed another meal of the starchy MREs.
Ryan, need stop.
What for?
Pee.
Could use a visit to the bushes myself.
Taking another swallow of the U.S. Army coffee, Ryan drained the cup.
Sure, but wait till we reach a stream. That way the water will wash away our traces from any predators.
Long as it's not too long.
JB slid his hat over his face and crossed his arms. Soon, soft snoring sounded.
Hey, check over there.
Christy pointed to their right.
A highway rest stop.
It appears to be in good condition.
Doc wiped his chin clean with a moist towelette.
And check those trucks.
JB jerked upright and shoved his fedora into position at the same time.
Trucks?
Ryan placed his tin cup on the dashboard into a small recess that seemed made for the purpose.
Dozens of them. Exactly what we need. Leviathan's chassis is built on a civilian truck frame.
Even if the transmissions were drained, a few drops would remain on the gears, and over the years, flow to the bottom. We get a couple of spoonfuls from each, and we get...